Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Hi, my name is Robin Misevich. I am your host here at the Transformation Cafe. I want to welcome everybody, and we've got a couple of wonderful regular cafe diners joining us in the cafe tonight. We have my co-host, Miss Amy. Amy, how are you tonight?
I am fantastic. Ready to starfish up.
Very starship up. We were like, what the heck does that mean? We'll be talking about that in a couple minutes. And we have Miss Gloria joining us. Hey, Miss Gloria, how are you tonight?
I am good. It's so great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us. So we're going to do a quick review. We're in the Cafe Book Club. We are doing Presence by Amy Cuddy. And for anybody who's joining us on the new, she had done a TED Talk a couple years ago, and she has the second most watched TED Talk in history. And it really works from the body-mind connection of taking a power stance and how that changes you on a psychological way of being feeling empowered and just coming from a new perspective in just a short amount of time. We're going to go into a lot of stuff of that tonight about how some of these things really do affect you in just all different kinds of ways. I'm excited because we're going to be talking about technology and things like that, that some of the new research and stuff that they've just been talking about. So just going back for a second, our last episode was 293. We were really talking about PST and with the vets and how yoga is just really an amazing result that they're finding as just a regular way of helping people with that post-traumatic stress. And it's just been an amazing tool that I really encourage you to go back to the last two episodes. We actually did a two-parter for Chapter 7 because there's just so much great information in there that really helps people. A couple sessions of yoga and people were just really it was locking in and helping people to just come from a new perspective. So anything from that last chapter, Amy, that you had any ahas?
So many, and really looking at how in stressful situations, how can you use poses of many kinds? And you talk about it again here a little bit in this chapter. So we'll come back at using yoga posturing to help you with stress of all kinds.
Yeah, we also talked a lot about breath. We got into the breath, and
mm-hmm.
it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
There's Amy did a great exercise this last episode that I really encourage people to go back and experience that for yourself with victory breath. And there was also the joy breath and boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that, you know, it's like well, I got to learn this position or I got to do this and I got to that. Well, we're all breathing, thank goodness. That's a good thing for all of us to know. And it's just a little bit of taking your breath and just a little bit different practice, a little bit of a different mindset and just realizing that you've just got that tool that you can go to at any moment, at any time to help you to feel more empowered and be able to move through just any circumstances you've got going on in your life. So I just think that's really great information. So we're moving on to Chapter 8, which is the body shapes and mind, and so starfish up. So, this one's just so packed. And, this book has been so magnificent in just the amount of this different information from chapter to chapter, and Amy Cuddy has just done an amazing job of, we keep saying it every episode, but, you know, you start into the chapter and you think you know what it's going to be about, and it's like way different than what you think it's going to be. So right off the bat, I wanted to go ahead and read from page 198, going into the science of just looking at this from thinking, from the way you even talk, different positions you take with the body. There's just so many ways that it's the body-mind instead of the body, the mind, the body, and moving from that position. So it's the way you carry yourself is a source of personal power, the kind of power that is the key to presence. It's the key that allows you to unlock yourself, your abilities, your creativity, your courage, and even your generosity. It gives you skills or talents you don't have. It helps you to share the ones you do have. It doesn't make you smarter or more informed. It makes you more resilient and open. It doesn't change who you are. It allows you to be who you are. Expanding your body expands your mind, which allows you to be present. And the results of that presence can be far-reaching. Taking control of your body language is not just about positioning in a powerful way. It's also about the fact that we pose in a powerful way much more often than we think. We need to change that. And really, that's what all this book has been about and just all this wonderful information that we have on that. So if you go to page 199 and 200, there's actually another TED Talk that Amy Cuddy had done. It was expressing and showing the powerful poses and the powerless poses. And, you know, one of them is the Superman, Superwoman pose. One is you're leaning back in a chair and your arms behind your head and you've got your feet crossed on the table. And once you're standing at a table and you're leaning over the table with your hands on the table, kind of in a fingers up position. The fourth position is you're sitting back in like a chair and your arm is resting on another chair. And the last pose is you've got your one leg up across over your knee and you're sitting back with your hands behind your head as well. So it's just a relaxed, powerful pose. It's all about being open and being forward in the way that you're expressing yourself. Anything with that, Amy, that Amy a few episodes has talked to before about, you know, taking that Peter Pan stance when she needed to be assertive in just different positions when she was working with a past job that she had. So anything with those power poses that, that when you were looking at them or just a sense of reference for yourself?
Oh, well, I want to get everybody to be thinking about it. You know, so they have the power poses and the, you know, powerless poses. And getting people to look at those, but actually try them out and see if they feel a difference. And I think they will. And I think you start, and I've been having this conversation, you and I have, and other people have, starting to notice people that we're dealing with and what is their poses and noticing in ourselves, where are we coming from? And I just don't have the very start of the chapter on page 193, the Maya Angelou quote, stand up straight and realize who you are. That you tower over your circumstances. So I think it's almost as looking at how you're, that standing upright is really going to help you to overcome and to be more resilient, I think. So I think it's also a resilience issue.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Because, I mean, the powerless poses are all, you know, if you looked at a person, you totally just say, you know, it seems like that person doesn't have a lot of confidence or there's a sense of doubt with themselves because a lot of it's crossing over their body. They've got the one position is the legs are crossed. They're standing up, but the legs are crossed over each other. And then the person's wrapping their arms around each other at the hip level. So there's a closing in of the body. Instead of being open, you're trying to make yourself smaller. The second one's you're sitting on a chair with your feet together and your hands are in your lap and kind of tucked into your leg. So everything is just really trying to be smaller. And the third one is the guy standing.
Right?
Yeah, it's protection too. It's just like, you know, I'm not accessible. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not accessible. The third one is he's got his he's standing with one hand with the elbow and the other one his hand is around is on the side of his neck. Like he's in the thinking or just kind of closed in kind of thing. The fourth one is a woman leaning onto a desk and sitting on a chair, and she's leaning over in, kind of in a slumped position. So slumped is the real key thing there, I think, with that. And then the third one, again, the person has their legs kind of folded into each other with, you know, feet and then the ankles, and then they've got their arms crossed, you know, on top of one another. So it's pretty much, you know, I'm not available kind of thing. It's kind of closing themselves down. And as we go through this chapter, you'll really see that just it's all about, you know, when I was reading this, I was thinking of, you know, how every mother said, sit up straight, you know, sit back in your chair, that kind of thing, instead of slumping and, you know, taking that slumped position. And on a mental level, there's places, you know, later on in the chapter that talk about that as well, how, you know, it so much affects your mind. It so much affects your energy. There's just different things that affect with all that kinds of stuff. So it's just like, am I open and available, or am I just not being present in this moment? Because all those powerless positions really put us in a place where we're not present with ourselves or in the environment that we're putting ourselves with. So I really love how Amy's encouraging people to take those positions and to be able to see them. But what's fascinating is when they were actually doing the research and having people take these positions to see how it was affecting them on a physiological level, just looking at the pictures also affected them. and they found that they had actually had to do two sets of experiments. One, when they were showing the position and having them take it, they realized that people were already kind of doing a mind-to-mind kind of thing instead of a mind-body thing. So they part of the experimenters, the researcher was verbally telling them what kind of position to get into instead of giving them a picture to see if that was going to be changing the outcome as well. So they were real sensitive to seeing how all those things were going to be affecting with everybody. So, you know, I love that too, because when it comes to a sense of, you know, coming into a power position, you can literally maybe experience that once or twice with yourself, and then you can go into what they, you know, later on we're talking about the virtual, where you can actually just think yourself into those positions where you see in your mind's eye yourself doing that and how your body will change. So that's really cool to think that that could even come from that perspective. So anything with that, Amy?
Well, just back to the yoga position, then on page 204, they talk about using the cobra position for 3 minutes. And then Charandy can find a picture of that where you're lying flat on the floor with your stomach on your stomach and your legs straight behind your feet pointed, hands on the floor and palms down right under your shoulders so that your elbows are bent and tight against your torso. And they had people hold that position for 3 minutes. And they were finding positive changes in hormone levels by them doing that one intervention.
That was really fascinating with that. So, Gloria, have you had anything with that, with knowing that doing yoga or just noticing within yourself or maybe somebody else when it came to, you know, something being a power position as to being non-powerful or non-positive?
Well, I know from personal experience, I grew up doing dance, and, you know, there was always, there was this this process where we, you know, would always have to align our bodies with the bar when we were doing ballet. And it was interesting because as I got older, and I had this teacher in eighth grade who had been a model, and then I had another woman who would, she would pride herself on telling all of the girls as they left the classroom, she'd say, "Shoulders back, ladies." And it was always kind of a stigma because, you know, the girls were afraid. They were self-conscious about the development of their body, and the boys would snicker. But I realized at the time that based on having had that training with the body younger, you know, at a younger age, that during that period of time, my body was just already there. You know, the shoulders were always back, and it affects your frame. It affects the way you breathe. It affects your physiology, and it affects your overall health just to begin with, beyond what happens within the mind as to how you feel more powerful. Because anytime, you know, people talk about being afraid or fearful of being on stage and speaking, and yet if you notice, the people who seem to have no difficulty are the people who have their shoulders back. They have their head up. The breathing, it affects the heart rate, affects the way the brain works. And the reticence as well as the performance when you get in front of people and speak, it completely changes the way people feel. I mean, I would say that when I say completely, it may not be 100%. They may still have that fear, but it takes away a lot of the anxiety.
I think that's really a good point about, you know, just like we're saying, with any kind of physical training, you know, we've been talking about yoga and all these other things, but with ballet or people who just become more athletic or are athletes, there's a sense of confidence about yourself, especially if you've been able to achieve a certain level of skill in those different ones. You really can make a big difference with your sense of confidence and then how you are about, you know, being able to, like you're saying, sit up straight and then taking that different kinds of stance. So that was really a great adding to that. So
I'd like to add, too, that when you have your shoulders back, if you are driving a car, you actually are able to stay awake more, and it makes you a safer driver as well because you're more aware of your surroundings at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So she was talking about that sit-up straight position. She said can do all sorts of things. And she said, taking it even further, they'll look at expansion movement and vocal expansion, speaking slowly, and then carrying yourself in a powerful way directs your feelings, thoughts, behaviors, and body to feel powerful and be present, even more being able to perform better in situations ranging from the mundane to the challenging. And as we go through the chapter, she gets into the different aspects of that. She goes into feeling and things like that. So anything with that, Amy, with the sitting up straight posture and then moving into just these different sections within the chapter?
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into story because there's a lot of material, so I encourage people to look at that, but a lot of great information that backs up where we're going. But one of the high points I thought was really fascinating on 215 at the top here, it talks about how movement, like posture, tells the brain how it feels and even manages what it remembers. As walking becomes more open, upright, and buoyant, our memories also follow suit. So you tend, when you're physically being more open and more present, what you remember is more positive. Really,
yeah.
Really fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just like we're saying, you know, it all aids to that. And I was really, I just love the section with 215 because she talks about, you know, the verbals. And she said that, you know, when it comes, they've done studies about claiming your social space when it comes to speaking. And she said, when we don't rush our words, we're not afraid to pause. We feel deserving at the time that we're using. We even make more direct eye contact when we're speaking. The slow speech demonstrates a kind of openness. When people speak slowly, they run the risk of being interrupted by others. In speaking slowly, one indicates that he or she is not afraid of being interrupted. People who speak slowly have a high chance of being clearly heard and understood. It also takes up the time of those of whom they are communicating. So it's that slower speech and the expanded of the posture really helps people to feel confident, powerful, and effective. And I thought those are really great ways of measuring yourself when it comes to your sense of worth. You know, what they did with that, they did a study where they actually had a monitor and they were having people read it, and they purposely slowed down what they were going to be able to see so they could read it. And they were saying, you know, how do you feel now that you've read this, you know, this section of something to read? And every one of them said, I feel more powerful and confident. I thought that was really an interesting thing to add to what we're talking about when it comes to that. And, you know, it's just expanding your body language through posture, movement, and speech makes you feel more confident and powerful, less anxious and self-absorbed, and generally more positive. So it's all about the, you know, again, the, you know, coming from being able to communicate clearly and to not feel like you're being rushed, you know, to come from that sense of confidence so you really can lose those runaway social anxieties that really can inhibit the way we're being able to be our true selves. I think that was just really awesome with all that. So what was the next thing that you really wanted to make sure we covered, Amy?
Well, and kind of the opposite in the conversation. I was having having a conversation yesterday with a friend of mine who is an amazing counselor, and she was saying that when people are really hurried and speaking fast, it's like her brain starts shutting down. So, you know, you may feel more confident, and your likelihood of the other person being more receptive is increased also. Because when you're talking so fast, people just, their brain can't kind of wire it in. They can't figure it out. So they start shutting down. So it's a benefit on both sides of the house, I think, which I think is really fascinating. And so we're talking now, so we're moving into, so we're thinking memory. We're talking about feelings. We're talking about, and so we're talking more about, you know, how you think about yourself. So here on 216, she talks about posture not only shapes the way we feel, it also shapes the way that we think about ourselves and about having those positive self-descriptions. And she said those positive self-concepts can either facilitate, and if they're not positive, then they will hinder our ability to connect with others, to perform our jobs, and simply be present. Because if you don't have a good self-confidence, then people pick up on that. Especially, you know, being somebody who, you know, you interview people for jobs, and if you feel that, people are less likely to give you an opportunity to go to the next phase of hiring, whether it's other the next phase of interviewing or, you know, or potentially getting the job. So I think it's really important to be doing that work up front. And they talk about a little later moving more into the 20s, page 220s and on, where she talks about how it's important that you do those postures before you go into an interview or before you do a presentation like Andy had talked about before, that when he was doing training, that he did it before he walked in there. Because I said, if you do it while you're in there, you know, make it kind of, you know, obvious, right, that you're doing that, that it can put people off and they are like, what is going on? And it seems like an out of syncness, and it may feel ingenuous and not authentic. But doing it beforehand builds up a confidence level where you can go in and perform. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, I don't know why I'm thinking of it, but, you know, I'm being a florist, you know, I'm at Flowers for You in Riverside, California. And every once in a while I have to deal with going up to a house and there's dogs there. And, you know, I've had dogs in my life. So, you know, when it comes to that, you know, whether I'm really the true alpha or not, when I go up and talk to dogs, I automatically come from, I stand tall, and I'm thinking of just the way that I interact with a dog. You know, I come from an alpha position. I'm like, hey, how's it going? And you know, I'm standing strong, like, you know, what are you doing? And, you know, it's just like dismissing them when it comes to a sense of interacting with them, of not coming from a place of, like, you don't have to like me. I'm here to do what I need to do. And more than not, the dogs really go, oh, okay, you know. They take a more submissive position when I come from that sense of confidence when I'm, you know, interacting just to go ahead and deliver the flowers. So I just think it's kind of funny. I just thought of that. So it's like coming off, you know, being the alpha. You know, we always, we've been talking about, you know, acting, you know, fake it till you make it, or, you know, fake it till you, be, you know, till you take on that behavior. When I'm in that behavior, like you're saying, you know, people can read that a mile away. Well, it's the same thing with, you know, interacting with other animals as well. You know, are you going to be the power animal, or are you going to be the one that's more submissive? And, you know, that's, you know, when it can, go ahead.
And the Caesar, the dog whisperer, one of my favorite leadership books is Leader of the Pack, where he talks about how people need to become from being a leader like a dog would. And how and so that's that. It seems kind of crazy, but it, in terms of energy and how you're standing, exactly right. That then there's a, and that's a good book if you want to learn how to be a better leader, Leader of the Pack. So yeah, it seems crazy, but it works.
Well, I don't even think it's necessarily being, I think if you can be a leader to yourself, you know, no matter what your situation is, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be for other people. And it's just being able to be open and generous. But, yeah, you know, you like your, what we're saying, being a leader on that. So how about you, Gloria? Have you had anything with it comes from just a sense of leadership and you know, taking that on, that stance of just empowerment for yourself?
I missed the very first part of your voice glitched out.
Oh, well, that's just, you know, coming from that place of power, have you had experiences with that anything that would, you know, that you thought was, interesting for the conversation?
Well, anytime, I'm going to go back to being on stage, because when we were training people to do sales, when we were training people to be more confident in closing, as well as just presenting who they are, what they believed, and to think about what they were saying before they said it, having them have their feet planted firmly on the ground, having it shoulder width apart, you know, being aware of their presence on where they were positioned on stage in relation to the audience, and working with projecting the voice, I mean, all of that comes into the power stance. Whether you have your hand when you do your various stances, so you may have one arm, you know, around, like across your chest, and the other arm with your thumb or your finger underneath your chin. You know, just knowing that you are feeling in a power stance, it helps you to be more powerful and to take charge of what you need to do and to speak and act confidently.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, you know, it's just like this is really coming back to that over and over again. I thought one thing was really interesting, if you go to page 218, that she was talking about, well, is this true for every culture? And sure enough, she was talking about in Asian cultures, the East Asian cultures, there's a difference between it being a vertical axis, and then the Western, it's more of a horizontal axis. So the example on that was talking about say, an elder or a monk would come in an Asian culture, the children and family, if it was a monk or something, came into the house, they would sit on the floor and the monk would sit in the chair. So I thought that was really interesting, having that being a different sense of position and the way that they would interact with people. So, you know, when it comes to a sense of power and what that would look like, I just thought that was just kind of a unique part of the message that she was giving with that. And then the same thing with, you know, Westerners with the horizontal expansion. They're, you know, they put their feet up on the table and they're gesturing with the open wide stance. And to an Eastern culture, that would be just considered very, very rude. So, you know, from culture to culture, it's always interesting to see how people are interacting with that. But then, yet they go on to say that, you know, ultimately in private, that everybody, there winds up being this universal language that everybody knows. When it comes to just on a personal level, you know, whether in, you know, in whether it's a social position or just a private position, ultimately we all are doing the same thing. So it's to change habitually dysfunctional postures and movement patterns might have a negative basis on informational processing. And then training, and we were talking about people that are upright and then they're slumped in their positions. In a slumped position, that the participants, they were finding that they automatically would go into just real deep body processes and just not really available to themselves or others. So, you know, whether that's, you know, no matter what culture that is, when it comes to, you know, just really bringing the body in and not having it expanded really changes just the whole mindset of what's happening with everything. So, Amy, what section did you want to go to next?
I want to bring up 4 points, and then, you know, people can go back and look at them, and we can talk about them, but I want that they're really significant. They talk about the body and sports psychology, that if you're right before a kick or an important point in sports of some kind or another, that if you didn't have these kind of stances, that there were significantly higher rates of unsuccessful shots and that the people tended to wither and choke under pressure. So go look at that. Also, it talks about pain and how people can deal with pain better by posturing. That's pretty exciting, I think. Then they talk about
the eye. Yeah, that's very exciting.
And I think the most important part of that is that they're saying the smaller the device, the more that people are non-present. They're really into the machine. The bigger, the whether it's a desktop or a laptop, you tend to be more open physically and you're more present. The smaller the device, the smaller the amount of presence. So a lot of information on that, so certainly go back and look at that. But the point that I find really, really fascinating, she had a lot of people emailing her who were disabled in different ways. And she said, could imagining the postures, could that have a positive and or negative effect? Imagining a powerful or powerless. And they did research that proved that, yes, even imagining those did create the power and powerlessness in a person. So I think that, and there's many pages on that, so please look at that. I think that is really exciting.
It goes into that whole virtual concepts with that, where people are even gaming, and they're using their avatars, and if their avatar was bigger and was taking on more power stances and took on more superhero positions when they were playing games, that would definitely come into people's psychology and physiology. So I thought that was really, just so neat to see that, you know, a lot of these video games are actually helping people. I was like, wow, okay, there's really something in there. So, you know, does it talk about, you know, body transfer illusions? Well, I think it's reality when it comes to something like that, if it's really helping people to come from a better position with themselves and to feel empowered. So, as always, you know, Amy Cuddy has just done a really excellent job of just covering a lot of different information and helping people to stand at attention. And our fish up is all about a woman Amy Cuddy was in the airport, and she noticed that a lady had recognized her, and she said, "Oh, are you?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, that's me." And the lady wound up showing her a starfish ring that she had gotten from her husband for her birthday. And she said he gave it to her to remind her of the personal power that she always has access to by taking that starfish position. And his power should not be concentrated in her hands of so few, but powerless in the other hand. So he really helped her to come from a way of being able to take on that personal power and just creating a virtuous cycle for helping people to be able to do that. And just like the breath, and just like being able to slow our words, being able to just, you know, imagine ourselves in this powerful position, there's just so many ways that we can help ourselves to be coming from power and creating just these opportunities for ourselves. So I think more than anything with this book, that's something that we've just gone back to over and over again about the body really helping the mind and helping ourselves ultimately to feel like ourselves in power. So any last words on that, Amy?
I think it's really important to say, start looking in your life and what areas do you want to maybe look at with the eye hunching, the physicalness with some kind of sport. How do you want to take this and practice that? And the next couple of chapters will help us with that.
Yeah, we're going to be moving into being able to take on those poses. The next couple chapters we're going to do together, and then the chapter 11 we'll be finishing up the book. That's going to be really great, too, on really becoming those things. And I look forward to just all the different wonderful stuff on it. So, as always, 30 minutes is just not enough time to take care of all these wonderful things that we have with presence. I want to thank Amy and Gloria for joining us, and we'll see you next time here at the cafe. Have a great week.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.
I started really early, about 5 minutes. Yeah, I did. I liked how you put in that happy song in the background. That was nice. Nice, honey.